The Around the NFL Podcast. Never gets at Chris Wessling references.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Welcome back.
Great job. I was out of town, tending to some family things in life on Sunday, and you guys, excuse me for the baseball metaphor, Mark, but you guys knocked it out of the park.
I thought it was a good show. We it's not the same without you in the house.
Certainly no, but Colleen did great, and you made a veiled reference to me, maybe being out of the office in an unjustified manner. I expected that. That was fine. I can only imagine what was being said while you were cranking through the write-ups, but it's okay.
Actually, nothing. But I thought that was one of the quickest shots out of the gate, the one I took at you.
Yeah, right out
but
of the gate.
But today, Wes, right in the – before you even get a chance to speak, Matt Money Smith taking you down.
Well, it's a factual statement. My references usually go – look at the other night. I tried to make a couple of Howard Jones references, and Rosenthal tramples all over.
Well, I still don't know who Howard Jones is. I'm sure most of my listeners don't.
You also made one during the show on Sunday, Wes, like a Welcome Back, Kotter reference of some sort. It was some 70s sitcom was referenced at one point.
I don't think so.
Am I the only one that's a little worried that Dan said we knocked it out of the park? Because if I know Dan, he usually comes back a little – like annoyed if things go too well without him. So if he said that we knocked it out of the park, he's kind of like, oh yeah,
I think
that's
you're,
a C plus.
I think you're reading the situation correctly.
It was fine. The show was fine. And you guys are all professionals.
Dan, he seems pretty smug right now.
That's silly. I try to pay a compliment. This what's happened. This
just
what happens
kidding.
To
I'm
me.
Kidding.
Well, how about a sincere compliment?
Well, I mean, whatever. See, that's what you get for trying to be a nice guy. That's why I prefer to keep it real and be evil. This is the Tuesday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. A big show. Big show coming up is week 5. Now in the rear view. See how it keeps moving? Mark, a lot of times in August or so, you'll say, I can't believe this is starting again. There's no escape and all that stuff. But then once we get in the season, it just flies.
I'm actually enjoying the season much more than some in the past.
Is it because you've been had a little distance from all the losing of the Browns? Although maybe they're not that bad.
I just think I brought my A game.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh,
I've got a lot of it.
That's good. He's got more confidence.
I thought we were trying to be sincere around here.
Yeah, all right. Well, no, I'm enjoying it. This has been great. It is flying. I can't believe we're already
flying by.
Six.
Week 5 in the books. It ended on Monday night with another good primetime game. We've had quite a string of solid primetime games this year. This time a big crushing loss for the Chargers, which we'll get into. The Steelers getting a win after their tough primetime loss the previous week. So we'll get into the Monday Night Football game. Also coming up is we'll hit the news, what's cooking around the NFL, which is the name of our podcast and of the TV show and of the news page. And
when's
that's it.
You know, when the TV show is hosted by Andrew Siciliano on NFL Network.
Yes, Andrew, who I believe will be back in here this week on Thursday's show or Thursday night show. That show is on, and I'll tell you when it's on. It's on at 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays.
Nailed it.
Three-hour show.
Just hitting the ground running.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that will hit some news, and then we will take out the forks. We've forked to date. I wrote this down. I think we've forked 9 teams out of 32. Greg.
Shocking that you failed your state-mandated math exam with that technique of counting.
32 teams, 9 have been forked, and we're going to fork at least 2 more today.
So that means 12 teams.
At least. That's a tease.
32 teams.
Yes.
We'll have forked at least 2 teams. So that's 11.
Mm-hmm.
12 make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
We've already determined the season. We only have 9 more to eliminate until we know the playoffs.
And I feel like the fork.
Maybe there'll be more than 2 today.
We should probably cut the fork maybe with a knife. Kill me. We should cut the fork probably after, week 7 or so? We can't drag it out too long with the fork, right?
Yeah, this year what we did. We actually mid-season. You know, orchestrated this segment effectively for the first time ever.
Yeah, it took 3 years. And apparently, I came back and I've been told I have to write the written piece, which means I'm going to take all the heat from the bloggers around the country for telling them that their seasons are over. But like I said to Greg, put it on me.
Calm down, bloggers.
Put it on me, boss. All right. So
I know you can take it.
We'll take the fork. We're going to hit the fork conversation, and then we're going to do the TNF preview. Thursday Night Football, that is the Falcons at Saints. C-plus game. But we will inject a lot of interesting insight into the match.
Is that Greg's favorite rivalry in the NFL?
You do like that one, Greg.
Well, I always talk it up because they actually have great games. Even if there's a bad team that particular year.
And there is.
And there seems to be lately one of them is bad. Then they still manage to have a good game. It's the opposite of Jets-Patriots, which gets all the hypes and never has any good games.
Is it still getting a lot of hype?
Maybe. Well, last year they had a great game.
Used to.
Actually, both games were decided by less than 3 points, but that's neither here nor there. All right, let's get into the Monday night game. Huh, Sydney? Le'Veon Bell scored on a one-yard wildcat run. The Wildcats back, baby, as time expired, giving the Pittsburgh Steelers and their backup quarterback Michael Vick a 24-20 win over the San Diego Chargers on Monday night. In what I would call Heinz West, also known as Qualcomm Stadium. A play that Bell runs set up, of course, by a drive down the field by Vic. 5 seconds on the clock. They had a timeout in their pocket after a personal foul call following a reception to the one-yard line. And what does he do? What does Mike Tomlin do, or Big Ben, or whoever is calling his offense, Todd Haley? He chooses a run that actually takes up 5 seconds and ended up being a touchdown just barely, Mark Sessler. And let's face it, if he doesn't get over the line there and they lose, the Steelers are getting killed on Tuesday morning.
It's what I have to respect about Tomlin and the Steelers in general. They go for the throat, and they're a team that, even though they played a pretty poor game on offense for most of the night, the way they came back, I feel like the Steelers do this all the time. They did it against the Titans last season. You just cannot count Pittsburgh out.
Well, they went for it, and it wasn't just that play. I love that on second down with 17 seconds left, they finally get into position. Immediately, they throw a bomb. They throw to the end zone in Darius Hayward Bay. They're trying to get the win. They're not playing for overtime like we see in so many of these games. With that all said, I think the idea with them running on the goal line was they could still get the field goal. I mean, Le'Veon Bell said it after the game. He was like, well, I just thought, you know, we could use 4 seconds and then we take the timeout. I think they're thinking, run it in there quick and we'd still...
It was a bad play call.
Still have a chance to get the touchdown. But Le'Veon Bell's so patient.
Right.
And he's also so good with his second effort that the play just took longer than that and it didn't matter.
But if you call, and I'm not going to question their offensive minds completely, but if you call like a halfback dive, it's not going to take 5 seconds. But Wildcat, you know, you're taking the shot, but basically a shotgun snap, you got to look for the hole. I mean, that was a really risky call, right, Wes? I mean, knowing if they would have lost the game with a timeout in their pocket, they got lucky, and he just barely got in.
I couldn't agree more. It blew my mind that they were trying to Wildcat in that situation. Why not just use Vic for the quarterback dive or something where you do have another chance if that doesn't work out? But I think, to me, when I think about this game, it's hard to overstate how safe the Chargers' lead felt at 17-10. The only Steelers touchdown was a pick six. They weren't moving the ball. Vic was playing horribly. Todd Haley must believe the biggest drop-off in the league from starter to backup is Big Ben to Michael Vick, the way he's treated Vick in a play calling.
Well, and it's looked like it. I mean, Michael Vick has done nothing to disprove that until those two drives.
Well, one play later, Vick hits Wheaton for 72 yards. They're right back in it.
Well, that's when offensive coordinator Ben Roethlisberger stepped in.
Stepped in with a play call that you could have done in your backyard at age 4.
Oh, give me a break. It's so
run
great.
As far as you can, and I'll throw it as far as I can.
Well, maybe he
will hope to connect on
maybe
the play.
At least he had a sense of what Mike Vick does well, that he was struggling for confidence. And it's like, hey, you know the one thing we know for a fact Michael Vick can still do? It's just step back there and gun it. Throw it deep. And he
did it.
That's
really all he's got left. I mean, he did have a nice 24-yard run. They didn't even have any call, you know, run play set up for him. He is playing handcuffed, it seems. But when he did get to run, that helped set up the winning score, the big run into the red zone.
I mean, also on that bomb, Brandon Flowers got absolutely smoked.
It's nothing new. The Bengals tortured him.
Who?
He has really struggled.
Who? Sydney. I don't know if we have. This will be a big test for Sydney. Who's done a great job so far. A rising star within the media division here at NFL.
I may have deleted that one in the
Okay. Well, let's work on it. We'll talk about it after the show. Three lashings for you.
So. No, you're right. That contract's killing them right now because he had a great year last year. They reward him with the big contract, and he has really struggled. Our guy, our making the leap pick, Jason Verrett, stepped in last night and had a good game, shutting down Antonio Brown. But I disagree with you, Wes, on the play call at the end, because to me, you had a chance to get two plays, and if for some reason it went wrong and went 5 seconds and the game ended, everyone's going to kill him. But you did it with the best player on the field and one of the best running backs I've seen in my life.
You can do it without a wildcat.
Well, right, that's what I'm calling.
In theory, if he is a little more decisive, doesn't that save time? You'd have no handoff. I mean, he has the ball right away. So I don't see why does a wildcat play take longer than a normal shotgun snap or, you know, regular handoff?
Seemed like it took longer.
It did because he was very patient looking for the hole, and then when he picked the hole, he bounced off the tackler, and it just ended up being a long play, which happens.
Can I just say, can I take a second? We don't like to get, talk religion here. That's for the theology podcast, which is coming up eventually. But I want to, dear God, thank you, Almighty, the powerful, for letting Le'Veon Bell cross the goal line there. Because if he did not, these talking points all week in the NFL, and we'd be writing 14 posts about it, would be the loss of 18 seconds from the game clock. Really an inexcusable gaffe by the game officials and the scoreboard operator. After the drive that ended with the game-winning touchdown, the ball is kicked off, downed in the end zone, so the clock shouldn't move. Instead, they run it for 18 seconds, and nobody notices. My boy Mike Tirico, that's 2 weeks in a row, misses something. But also, so did the scoreboard operator, and then as did six game officials, including the side judge who was responsible. The NFL released a statement on Tuesday to our boy Rap Sheet, basically saying, yes, that was something that was missed, and that was the responsibility of that judge, but anybody could have fixed it, and it's not a reviewable call. So thankfully, the Steelers scored that last play because there would have been a huge mess on their hands if he didn't.
Absolutely, and this comes up more than we think. I remember there was, I think it was a Cardinals game last year where something very similar happened. It wasn't as dramatic where you scored a touchdown at the end of the game where just people miss it and 15 seconds go off the clock. I mean, the thing that looks bad is the scoreboard operator is always a local guy. It's
right.
Like they don't, and I'm not saying anyone's doing that.
What are you saying?
I'm saying it's not on purpose. It's someone that does college games or it's a college official. But it's just a bad look when you suddenly are running off 20 seconds on the Steelers.
It's a bad look because the way it operates is they use kind of local guys during the regular season. But then once the postseason starts, they ship in guys from wherever in the country, I guess the best timekeepers.
It's surprising.
Well, they've contacted you about it, Mark, because of your timing experience on Win West's Toast.
Listen, I was replaced by a robot on this show.
A robot.
And it is probably in my top five list of jobs I wouldn't want. Because no one, if you do a good job, no one knows who you are. The only time they'll ever know who you are is if you botch it.
But we can't give everything over to robots, and that's really our robot podcast, which is coming up a little later in the year, is what gets handed over to the robots. What does man hold for himself?
Until they figure out the catch rule, I feel like all these little manufactured controversies don't matter at all because, what are the rules in this game anymore? Mm. I can't even figure them out.
Wes finds a way to rail against the catch rule, even when there's
I don't even care if 18 seconds came off the clock. That's not nearly as important as a guy getting credit for a catch he didn't have, or someone not getting credit.
Should we talk about the Chargers fan performance? Because they didn't show up. You know, this happens a lot at Chargers games. But for the big-time Chargers fans that are out there, this had to have been a crushing loss to not be able to beat Mike Vick, who for 3.5 quarters looked like one of the very worst starters in the NFL that you could have. I know the offensive line is banged up, but you have to find a way to move the ball a little more than they did against Pittsburgh.
And I know there are passionate fans in San Diego, and Greg, we've had this conversation / argument several times about, I didn't include them in my pain rankings, NFL.com/pain rankings. But, you cannot let 45,000 to 50,000 Steelers fans invade your building on a weeknight like that. I mean, it was just a terrible showing for a franchise that's trying to figure out where they'll be next. I mean, how
who's trying to stick it to their fans, who literally has said publicly the worst outcome in this whole scenario would be staying in San Diego while other teams move into L.A.
So you're saying the fan base is kind of quitting on the idea of the Chargers
being
their
They've never been a hardcore fan base in terms of numbers. I don't think anyone would argue that. But I have no problem with fans giving up on them the way that they're being treated.
I mean, Tom Brady vocally said that when the Patriots played him last season that it was a New England home crowd. That was the case when they barely beat Cleveland last week, and that was the case last night against Pittsburgh.
I'll feel bad if this ends up, you know, those fans that are real fans, I'll feel bad for them. But at the same time, it's like, come on.
Chargers not a great – Chargers
– come on.
Here's their two wins.
Can't let that happen.
They beat the Lions by a mere 5 points, a bad Lions team.
Big comeback.
And they barely beat Cleveland a week ago.
Dan, what's more painful than existential angst? They don't even know they exist.
Oh, that's true.
It's like a – they're like a walking performance of Waiting for Godot.
All right, Wes. I don't know that reference. The last reference lost.
Wes strikes again.
What was that? Fill me in, because I'm sure I'm not alone.
It was a theatrical play.
70s
sitcom starring Mary Tyler Moore.
No, it wasn't.
It's a play by Samuel Beckett, French playwright.
Oh, come on.
Well, I think he's an Irish playwright who did it in France.
Now you're just showing off. Sydney, let's do some news.
The worst thing is when you have an itch and you can't wipe it because you got eye black. The struggle is real.
Andy Dalton. That is Andy Dalton. Greg, we were on the Dave Damashek football program earlier today. Who are you sure about that?
Explain it, Greg.
And you said that Andy Dalton, I believe, is the third best quarterback in the NFL.
I said the way he is playing, if you're just evaluating his play this season, he has been right there as the third or fourth. I'm not counting Ben because he's hurt. So him and Palmer would be right there after the top two. Yes, in terms of how he's playing.
Where do you have Josh Johnson on that list?
Well, he has the most signings this season, so that's working for him. He's been signed. So
will Josh McCown rise above 30 this week?
Oh, pipe.
So you have Brady and Rodgers, first and second. Big Ben.
Big Ben doesn't count because he's not playing.
As long as you don't have him above Palmer and Big Ben, then I'm fine with
that. I would say I probably will keep Palmer there because he hasn't done anything to lose his spot.
He's making
– but to me, it's a tie. I don't know. Dalton's making four or five deep throws a week, but I know that has nothing to do with Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson was signed by the Bills on Tuesday, and this was done because the health of starter Tyrod Taylor is in serious question as the team gets ready for their Week 6 matchup against who, Mark? The Bengals and Andy Dalton.
That's correct.
Tyrod Taylor, there's a report out there from Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports at the time of this taping that Tyrod Taylor is dealing with an MCL sprain, an injury that will require him to miss multiple weeks, which is really terrible news for the Bills if true, because E.J. Manuel is the backup quarterback of the Bills. And that's not a good thing, Greg Rosenthal.
It's not. I was really excited watching Tyrod Taylor. I think he's got something. I think he's going to get
this kid's got it, see?
I think he's going to get a lot better. I know he's made some mistakes, hasn't been perfect. But E.J. Manuel hasn't shown that type of potential. Now, maybe it's the offense. Maybe Greg Roman can get E.J. Manuel out there. I'm more interested to watch E.J. Manuel than if Matt Cassel was still on that team. And I know, you know.
There aren't that many teams in the league that are as banged up as Buffalo. You didn't have LeSean McCoy last week. You didn't have Carlos Williams. You've lost your quarterback, who Ryan said he's looked good, and Tyrod Taylor's not been healthy all year. That he's not been 100%.
Hasn't been on the injury report.
Well, that's
worth noting.
Fair point.
Sorry to bulldog.
Well, you made an absolute a stellar point.
How hurt was he before? But now it seems like – and he was hurt on apparently a horse collar tackle in the game.
Well, he runs a lot. I mean, he has the same issue that Kaepernick and RG3
not a big guy
has, that he runs. That's a huge part of their offense, and he mostly does a good job avoiding hits, but he's never played before. I mean, he's taking hits in the pocket, and now he's out there every snap. He's not used to it.
Maybe the Bills can swing a trade for Matt Cassel.
Bring him back. He can do it. They're 3-2 right now, correct?
That's right.
I mean, that is going to be tough for them if they
– a lot of pressure
on them. If they're playing for 4 weeks, or let's say, or 3 weeks or 2 weeks. I mean, E.J. Manuel is not a good quarterback.
That's a tough matchup with the Bengals.
They're not beating
the Bengals. Go in with E.J. Manuel.
And then they go to London after that. Mark Sessler is going to be covering the Bills very closely. You're actually an embedded reporter with the Bills.
Well, I was planning to write a like a nice long Tyrod Taylor piece, and that might be up in smoke. Here comes 8,000 words on EJ Manuel. Get ready.
Are the Bills aware?
Rex Ryan.
Listen, yes. I've already spoken to Bills PR. They couldn't be happier about the arrangement. I did. Wrote them yesterday.
Do they know about your, you know, anti-Rex Ryan leading?
I view this as a chance to have my mind changed.
I bet it happens, too. I bet you come back with a new
bury the hatchet.
The one time that I spoke, not, you know, one-on-one, but I was in a scrum with Rex Ryan for quite a while, a delightful character, to be honest. It's during the season that he drives me nuts.
Gotcha.
Well, and you love Greg Roman, so that's going to help.
You're going to get a pint with Greg Roman, I bet, right? He's in your Rolodex.
We'll see. I don't know. It sounds like I got a busy schedule.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Greg Roman's just out there in London getting pints. Maybe he is.
Well, when we were at the Super Bowl, we saw Greg Roman with Randy Moss and some other Niners having pints and dinner.
True or false, you exchanged digits with the old Grego in an airport.
Mm. That is true.
That's right. We saw.
Although I wisely have not bothered him.
We saw him at Giacomo's for our New Orleans listeners. Mm. How about that?
Giacomo. Ooh, that was delicious. Isn't that one we saw?
One of the best places in New Orleans. Go there.
Was it Randy Moss?
It was Randy Moss, Greg Roman.
Frank Gore was there.
Frank Gore.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Moving on. Sean Payton is the coach of the Saints. The Saints stink. And Payton's been there forever. So you start to wonder, is it perhaps in the air, change in the air for the franchise? One day after ESPN reported that multiple teams plan to inquire about Payton's availability after 2015, Payton himself dismissed the chatter. Here's what he said. I think that happens when you're in year 10 and not having success. He said, per the team's website, I love it here. I'm close to my children. I just built a brand new place here. So you get tired of answering the questions. And yet, I understand you asking. And Greg Rosenthal is our resident kind of sneaky Saints fan. And this got under Greg's skin earlier this morning. He started to get all fired up just at the thought of Sean Payton making these comments to the media.
Well, it's one of the phoniest things I've ever heard. He goes out of his way to imply that Peter King's report earlier this year that he's not a credible source at all, and that, you know, you should look at what he's done. And he goes back through all the different reports over time that has suggested Sean Payton, you know, might have interest elsewhere. And in his heart and in the people who are in that room's heart, they know while he's saying this information isn't coming from the Dolphins. This information isn't coming from anywhere but Sean Payton's camp, because, you know, he's you know, they're playing feelers out there. So it's one thing to just kind of avoid the subject. Hey, let's not talk about it. But to grandstand as if your respect and, you know, your dignity has been impugned by anyone reporting this, when, let's face it, you're a part of putting that out there. Because he would love to have that Dolphins job.
He is sick and tired of the rumor and innuendo which he is spreading throughout the league.
Exactly. That's all I'm saying. Someone's got to call him on it.
Thank you. Dan, bigger phony, Sean Payton or Drew Brees?
Well, they're perfect for each other.
Oh.
What a match made in heaven that is. I would lean towards Drew Brees, but Greg's outrage here is justified, and it's making me perhaps rethink it.
Dan, if you could take Sean Payton over Todd Bowles, you're a Jets fan, would you do it?
No.
Yeah, I guess I understand that Sean Payton's had a lot of success, and do I really want him taking over my team?
I don't want to.
I'm not a big Sean Payton guy.
I'm not going to take away anything that he's done in 10 years. Remember, New Orleans was a terrible team for years and years when him and Brees got to town. But it's always that chicken or egg thing with a quarterback and a coach together. So I don't know if Payton would necessarily have success if all of a sudden he was coaching a Ryan Fitzpatrick-led offense. I don't know if I give him the benefit of the doubt.
He kept talking during this. It was a conference call with the reporters yesterday after he grandstanded and did everything exactly the way you said, Greg. He talked about how, listen, the culture is really improving here. We've done such good work on that front. You're also the person who presided over the culture completely crumbling. That was a huge issue with players they let go. I mean, there's something not right in New Orleans.
Despite all this, and I agree, and it depends on how much power he would want in his next place, whether he wants to be in charge of all the personnel and GM and all that, that I wouldn't want to sign up for. Despite all that, I think it'd be a good hire for the Dolphins. I think what he's done with their offense in the Saints over the last 10 years, I mean, he's obviously the best coach in their franchise history. The success that they had, I think, is worth giving him another shot, and it's better than any Dolphins coach they've had in a while.
There's a good Southern noir, like Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil type of movie waiting to be written about this whole – everything that's been going on around New Orleans and the Saints over
that's
the last
true.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
There was, for me, the tipping point of the Sean Payton tenure was after Bounty Gate and after he was banned for a year. And everybody talks about the do-your-job Belichick thing, but still one of the great unintentional comedy moments of the last 10 years of the NFL was that in the Saints practice facility was there was a giant banner with Sean Payton's face on it underneath a do-your-job looking down upon the Saints players. Like he was like, I don't know, like Pol Pot or something, or some type of great leader, and it was putting shining down upon his teammates. Ego run wild, and it's coming back now.
I wouldn't call Pol Pot a great leader.
No, that was a bad historical reference.
A domineering figure.
There you go.
Give me a real domineering figure in world history.
Edie, I mean.
All right, want something a little more.
Ho Chi Minh.
Ho Chi Minh, I like that. You know what it's like the big thing on the wall in like communist China,
right.
And it's just the giant picture?
Like Jimmy Carter.
Edward Kennedy.
The history podcast will not be coming.
Mike Dukakis.
Moving on. Mike Dukakis.
We've lost like half our listeners.
Professor at Northeastern, my alma mater. Here we go. Moving on. Dwight Freeney is back, Chris Wessling. Get excited. The former Colts star signed a one-year deal with the Cardinals. Veteran minimum $870K with sack incentives, rap sheet adds. He's 35 years old now. He had 3.5 sacks last year with San Diego, still got to the quarterback a little bit, maybe can play a little bit, but after the Arizona Cardinals dealt with some injury issues out of their win on Sunday, the decision was made to bring in the old-timer.
I don't even have to read Mark's post to tell you what happened here. Dwight Freeney, you know, he's at the stage of his career where he can sit back and wait to see how the teams play out. Who's going to be a contender? He doesn't want to get stuck on some bum team. And then he hears that we've made the Cardinals a team of ATL, and they're off to a 4-1 start. They look phenomenal. He said, that's the team I want to play for, and I can play for whoever I want.
Trent Richardson's doing the same thing right now.
Yeah, that's right. Now. The Freeney has that's his right. own team of ATL, essentially, or team of, you know, Freeney. That he wanted to wait. He waited a little bit longer than us. He wanted to see what was happening, and then he chose the Cardinals.
I feel like it was a similar process.
Had nothing to do with the two outside linebackers that got hurt on Sunday, but, you know.
Well, all right.
He must have been
using
really,
logic.
He must have been really impatient listening to the podcast week after week as we doddered over it.
And the Cardinals are one of the few teams that can take a guy like Freeney and make it work because, like Chris and I were talking about yesterday, Bruce Arians finds a way to use every single one of his players every week in a useful way.
The next time we talk about this guy is when he retires in 8 months.
Well, why not?
Just
the Super Bowl ring.
Add him to the list of a half dozen of the best comeback player of the year candidates that all reside on the Cardinals roster.
Based on Chris Johnson's trajectory, I expect Dwight Freeney to lead the league in sacks.
That's what I'm talking about. Chris Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Carson Palmer, Tyrann Mathieu, Jonathan Cooper, Patrick Peterson came back from diabetes to have a good year.
Diabetes.
That's the Wilford Brimley pronunciation.
By the way, we owe a little bit, let's be fair. The Around the NFL podcast owes Chris Johnson an apology. I think I kind of remember when he signed with the Cardinals, we debated whether even to talk about it.
Or if he'd even make the team.
That's how great of a story it is.
So we discounted him. I mean, he literally.
I don't think we can be blamed for that.
He was in multiple years of decline and had a bullet in his arm or chest. So maybe we were justified, but he is real. I mean, third in the league
he's
in rushing
single
right
most
now.
Surprising,
tied for second.
Single most surprising story.
Wow. A long hospital stay where you have time to just think and ponder, you know, followed by
dream,
a long
by
break is again, it's another year where a nice long break gives someone an absolute refreshing power charge.
One of my favorite Mark Sessler dream scenarios is him suffering some type of injury that puts him in the hospital for a long time, and the world melts away from
well,
him.
Well, right, nothing terrible.
And he reads books,
right.
And like you don't have a brain injury.
Well, it's the same reason that I would love to go to jail for a little bit. Mm. Not a really nasty jail,
all of
but
these
like
scenarios
a nice jail.
Would be great on your family, you know.
That's what he's trying to get away from.
No, it's not happening. That is not true at all.
You ever studied the history of the most renowned religious gurus of all time, most of them have either suffered some kind of illness / injury or spent time in prison.
There you go.
So what are we learning about Mark right now?
Huh?
What do we?
Well,
learning?
I don't really want this to happen. But I mean, I think it's just, you know.
Chris, are you implying Mark might be a future religious leader?
I can totally
see that.
Not only that, but Chris Johnson might have a following soon.
Okay. The difference between religious leader and cult leader is very precarious. So just be careful, Mark.
Well,
I don't want you wearing matching white Nikes with a group of people.
I am not going to go down the Heaven's Gate road. Thank you very much.
Are you sure?
Rancho Santa Fe.
That feels like half of your Qualis to Fantasia questions.
I could see you living on like a ranch in the middle of nowhere with 100 other people, and like Bernie Kosar is your right hand guy.
Sounds great.
Finally, in the news, Golden Tate is stuck on a bad team this year. The winless Detroit Lions are 0-5 after getting bombed at home, 42-17 by the Cardinals. He said this, Golden Tate, to the Detroit Free Press. You know, I'm the first one to say I love our fans. I think they're amazing, and they've been patient for a long time. But before the game got out of hand, before the game started, I looked up and there were a lot of empty seats. Early on, our team is getting booed. Later in the game, it sounded like the loudest it got was when Stafford was leaving the game and Orlovsky came in. Basically, Tate is saying that the team turned their backs on the Lions. This is one of your boys, Chris Wessling. 99 catches last year, but these are the type of stories you read when a season of promise turns to dust.
Yeah, pipe down, Golden Tate. What gives him the right? He's earning millions of dollars. He hasn't been through. He's new to Detroit. He hasn't been through what these fans have been through. If he was in their place, he'd turn their backs on himself too.
You're right. And Nate Burleson on NFL Network yesterday made a point. You know, he was in Detroit for a long, long time. He does know that fan base. That is not a bunch of, you know, silver spoon millionaires. That they're, it's a hardworking town, and they put a lot of money into their tickets. And you go and you're watching an absolute crap team that isn't living up to its talent base. Their quarterback is regressing and completely melting down. They have a lot to be upset about. Golden Tate needs to just, you know, how about just make a play?
Sydney.
Thank you.
Sydney, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. Doing just great.
How's everything going right now?
So fantastic. Listen, I was just talking to Kevin Patra.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Because I was thinking about this because Kevin wrote this post about Golden Tate in which he called the loss to the Cardinals pathetically abhorrent and their own five. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough being Kevin Patra sometimes.
Let's be honest. There were some angry blue tweets a few weeks ago during that Lions Seahawks.
Absolutely.
Game.
That Monday night game.
Real anger.
And Sydney, I'm going to give you a little task here for after the show. Kevin Patra, in response to a tweet I had about the Lions, responded, me, Dan Hanses. So I didn't take it personally, but I'm starting to now worry about his well-being. And I talked to Sydney. I said, let's get him on the phone and check in
with Kevin. Dan.
Hey, Patra, what's up?
Dan. To be fair, in my defense, I might have been double digits deep on a couple barley pops, in my defense.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that's why, and I understand that, and I think you misunderstood the context of my tweet and took it as a shot, and that happens. All of us have, when you're
under the influence of a lot of sauce.
Right. I've maybe looked into things differently, and so there's no issues between us, but I'm more interested, and I think that I speak for the whole room. Some concern. It's now you live in the Midwest and it's starting to get colder and, you know, it's kind of like a gloomy time of year once the sun, you know, we're going to have daylight savings coming up, I believe, on November 1st. And that adds to the spirits in the sky and your team's 0-5 and your apartment, you know, it overlooks, you know, what looks like some type of project building. I just want to check in with you and see how you're doing right now. Kevin Patra, Chicago correspondent.
I'm going to drive down to the south side of Chicago and tell them that you said I live in the project.
Well, let's talk about it. You live in Chicago, but you're from Michigan and you're a Detroit Lions fan. You know, of course, Matthew Stafford, he had some quotes today. He was like a little ticked off, it seems, at Jim Caldwell for yanking him out of that game after three picks. And the Lions can get out of this contract. And this is the question I had for Patrick. They can get out of this contract after this year. Would you, Kevin Patra, if things didn't significantly turn, be okay with the Lions starting over without Matt Stafford?
Well, that depends on what your other options are. I mean, you saw with the Bears last year and Cutler. They wanted to get rid of Cutler, but what was their better option? If they get the number one pick,
and you got a guy like Groff and you think he can be better in the future, absolutely.
What about,
I got no problem moving on.
What about the Bears and Lions just swapping problems?
Oh my God, honestly, Jay Cutler in Detroit?
Honestly, I don't think that Cutler in the last 3 years has played as bad as Stafford has in the last 3 weeks. I've never seen, because at least
you're talking about a guy who got benched for Jimmy Clausen.
But this is a guy who got benched for Dan Orlovsky. So I mean, six to one, half dozen to the other. But I'm saying the way that Cutler plays, at least he was trying to make plays. Stafford doesn't seem like he wants to run the offense that's in the plays that are called, and he's so skittish in the pocket. He's just looking at the pass rush. He hasn't helped his offensive line out at all. I mean, you look at a guy like Philip Rivers last night, just changing the plays and getting the coverages and making sure he gets the right plays. Stafford does none of that. Whether that's he's able to do it or not, he doesn't.
On the Patra rage meter, which ranked higher? Though?
Which is always high, by the way. Let me just give everyone a baseline. The rage meter rests at about 7.5 out of 10, but it can go up higher. Go ahead,
Just describe the differences, I guess, between the Lions loss in Seattle and then the one against the Cardinals, which was just, embarrassing. And like, how did the rage meter and the rage manifest itself?
Well, I mean, the one in Seattle it's more gut punch because it was right there. I know people like to make, the call was terrible. I would have rather than not even known that was an illegal call because, I mean, you have a Hall of Fame wide receiver going into the end zone and he gets it knocked out. You should lose that game. That was more gut punch because they had a chance to win. So the depressing thing about the Cardinals' loss is just that we've been here before. This is a team that just laid down after they got hit, and they just laid down. And they don't have the players in the defensive line to do anything when you got Chris Johnson running up the middle. They just don't have it right now.
Yeah. Were you annoyed by Tate's comments?
Not at all. Not at all. I think Golden Tate's one of the more intellectual football players. I think he's frustrated. I think that's where that's coming from. And he took it back the next day. He said, I think he probably talked to Nate Burleson, and I heard a second you guys mention that. I wasn't upset at all. I think he knew he's frustrated. He wanted to get that out, and he started backtracking immediately because the fans have every right to be upset. You come in after a playoff season and you hope that you can make strides. You lose your best player, your best defensive player, and you have a coaching staff who is inept, just absolutely and 100% inept on the offensive side of the ball.
Patra, what is more depressing for you? The idea that you thought you had a franchise quarterback and he is regressing faster than maybe anyone east of Colin Kaepernick, or the fact that the Lions are locked into four more primetime games this year that they cannot be flexed out of?
Oh, that
a lot of drinking nights for Patra.
National league televised games. Yeah, Thanksgiving is always a fun one. I'm more depressed about Stafford, obviously. I mean, the money that's involved in that and what it means to have a quarterback in the NFL, you need that to succeed. And so that's clearly a more depressed. I can live with the whole nation having to sit with me through tire fire after tire fire after tire fire after tire fire.
It seems to me that old Kevo is in a good spot. So he's frustrated as he should be. But he's taking it in stride, and so that's good.
Things have never been better.
So you're okay, Kevin. Correct.
Dan, I got Jim Harbaugh in my life right now, so we're all good on that front.
Oh,
wow,
that's true. See, there's more, Mark, and this is a lesson for you. There's more beyond your favorite NFL team. Other sports, other hobbies.
I think some of the Cubs fever in Chicago is really.
I was attempting to explore that earlier this season.
Sinking into Patra.
Do you is there a woman in your life right now, Patra?
You know what, Dan? I don't get into that personal side. We'll stick to the.
All right.
That sounds like a big fat no.
I like to know what's happening. That's it. So Patra, he's a guy. He's like, listen, he's not unlike a Chris Martin of Coldplay. He's like, my personal life is my personal life. I don't think Kevin Patra's ever listened to a Coldplay song. So it's interesting to bring up those two names, right, Kev?
I have heard the popular ones, but I'm not going to say I frequent.
It's the only thing that he has in common with Chris Martin.
Best hip-hop artist ever, Eminem, yes or no, Patra?
No.
Okay, just checking.
Sorry.
All right, that's it. Kevin Patra, our Chicago correspondent. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man. Have a good one, fellas.
See you, Kevin.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, that was really good to hear.
It's good to check in. I mean, there was concern. I think he's going to end up in a wild fireball of rage before this all ends.
You still think it's coming?
Oh, yes.
All right, let's do some forkage.
Stick a fork in him.
All right, so as we talked about earlier in the show, Lions, Patriots, Lions, the Niners, Saints, Texans, Dolphins, Bucks, Raiders, Browns, and Bears, all shamed. And now, after a discussion on our inter-office instant messenger client, Slack, quit slacking. Sign up for Slack today. give us a sponsor. I got check. Got that McDonald arch laughing at us every time we do that show, Greg. Let's add two more on our Slack client, our chat client. We did pick two more teams, and they are the following.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
The Baltimore Ravens.
Shame.
All right. So.
Delightful.
The Chiefs and Ravens, of course. The Chiefs, not only do they lose to the Bears 18-17, they lose Jamal Charles. It has been confirmed, an ACL tear. He's now torn the ACL in both knees, so hopefully he gets back and is still Jamal Charles, but it won't be this year. And the Ravens, what else can you say? They get a gift from the football gods a week ago Thursday against the Steelers, and then they gag it away and lose to the Browns of all teams. That had a feel-good mark for your beloved Brownies to basically end the Ravens season.
It is the only the second time they've ever beaten them with Joe Flacco as the Ravens quarterback. So it's been a very one-sided butt whipping. So yes, it felt great. Goodbye, right on Baltimore.
Right on their butts. They're getting whipped right on the old butts. All right, so there are some teams now that have not. First of all, I'll start with this team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've been calling for the fork for a couple of weeks, and it's not because, and Wes made a good point or said something earlier today. No, it wasn't.
Wes made a good point.
No,
actually he just opened his mouth and words came out. But similar idea.
Don't cut me off because that's not what I was trying to say. Because it wasn't a point. It was a fact. He was saying that Blake Bortles is on pace for 33 touchdowns and 4,000 yards, something around there.
41-57 and 32-13 TD to INT ratio.
All right, so Blake Bortles is trending in the right direction. He has a shoulder injury right now. We don't know what that means and what that means for him and his team. But my point is 1-4 is 1-4 is 1-4. And if we're being bold here, we're saying even Bortles, you know, going on the upside, leave that by itself. Still, they're 1-4 and they're the Jaguars. They're going to make the playoffs. Come on.
That's a great point, Dan. No, actually, it's not. It's just
I need
something
wow.
said.
It's not ugly, very
just
quick.
Open your mouth and words came out.
I need someone to convince me that the Indianapolis Colts aren't a terrible team before I knock out the Jaguars, who have a quarterback. The Texans, I'm fine with knocking out because they have the worst quarterback situation.
We did
NFL.
Knock them out, yes.
Right. The Jaguars have a quarterback, and the AFC South doesn't have a good team.
I was with you on not forking the Jaguars last week. Part of it was the schedule. To lose in Tampa and give up 38 points was a reveal magnifico for that defense.
What was it? For Sydney.
I'm over two today, guys. It's not good. It's not good.
It's okay.
I mean, to me,
she's still talking with the Patriots.
They're giving up 38 points to the Buccaneers. That's the woman in Patra's life.
Oh, wow. Wait, are you dating Kevin Patra, Sid?
What is this? What are we talking about right now?
She doesn't want to discuss it
again.
Either.
Way too personal. Perhaps it's great that Blake's doing well, but you're still losing to the Bucks. This team isn't ready yet.
Well, I think at best they could come kind of close to what the Texans did last year, which is your record is better than maybe you really are as a team because you are playing the Texans and the Titans and whatever else comes up. But really, for them to make the playoffs, let's say they have to go 9-7 at very worst. That means they go 8-3 from here on out. I just don't see team-wide a Jaguars team doing that. Bortles is a major positive.
My point is really not even about the Jaguars. None of you has convinced me that the Colts are a good team.
You think,
but you got to win.
You think 7 or 8 wins might win the AFC South, and that the Jaguars are as likely as any team to win it. Is
yes.
What if they lose? They have. They
to
have
me, I would go with the Titans as that other team.
Sure, and the 1-3 Titans.
Yeah,
and with a coach who basically gift wrapped, coached the most conservative game I've seen in years in Week 5. Basically. Just punted every time he had a chance to, and just I don't know.
I can't
get behind the
but
Titans.
It does come down to the Jaguars winning these games, and they're going to have to win 8 more to make that playoff.
That's where the point about the fact that they have a quarterback.
They do play the worst team in the league right now, the Texans, this week.
What if they lose to the Texans?
Then it's over. They're 1-5.
Would you be willing to sign off?
Okay. And then they play potentially EJ Manuel in London. You know, maybe,
yes. If they lose to the Texans, I will sign off on forking them.
And, you know, one team that I nominated, but it did not go through legislation, the San Diego Chargers. A terrible loss last night, obviously, as we talked about earlier in the show. And to me, this just, you know, they're 16 in our power poll because they are literally the middle of the pack. I don't see them winning 10 games or even 9 games. I think it's a 7-8 win team. So why not just fork them?
That one I voted against because if we're going to not fork the Jaguars because of Blake Bortles, then a 2-3 team with Phillip Rivers as your quarterback in an AFC where, yes, you have the South and they're not going to have a second playoff team. There's not a lot of dominant teams in the AFC. The Chargers can hang around for a while.
The wild card teams aren't that wildly impressive. You've got the Jets, Bills, and Steelers as the 3 teams who are in the same neighborhood really as the Chargers. And 2 of those teams have to make it.
That's fair. How about the Redskins?
I would fork the Redskins because you guys are
just, just hate the Redskins.
Well, hey, we got to be bold. We got to pick. This thing has to be over by week 6.
Well, why not be bold and pick the Cowboys instead?
Because that's not the team I believe.
Well, forking the Redskins didn't work for you the other time.
Well,
what are you blaming it on me for?
Listen, the Cowboys should not be
blaming
the team.
It on us.
The Cowboys are going to get back arguably the best quarterback in the division and the best wide receiver in the division
when?
In short order. Well, we know we might get Dez back in a week, and we might get Romo back for the last 5 games or 6 games, whatever it may be.
They still have Brandon Weeden.
Yes. Well, they're going to have Matt Cassel, and maybe he'll be better than Brandon Weeden. Who knows? But I think that's enough for me not to want to fork them. Yeah. The Giants now have won 3 in a row, so they're safe. And then the Eagles, listen, you can make a case for the Eagles too, but I know everyone's kind of waiting for the Eagles to put it together.
It's tough to fork anyone in that division. They're all in one game and none look great.
But talk about a division where 8-8 could potentially win it. And the Redskins, sneaky, have maybe the best defense in that division.
I know. I feel like we're building up the Redskins as a buzz team, but I don't know. I don't see them. I don't see this happening.
Well, they've played the most complete game of any team in that division, and honestly, I think they're better than the Giants and the Redskins are the best 2 teams in that division.
And the Titans, I'm assuming, just to double back to AFC South, same thinking with the Jaguars, is that division so bad, even at 1-3, that we shouldn't be 4.
Well, they're getting real close.
All right, that's the discussion. So now 11 teams forked. I mean, should we set a cutoff date? Because we don't want to become, you know, total jokes taking this too far.
The last couple of years we've been doing it up until week 13, week 14. So you're saying essentially we will lock in the 12 playoff teams at midseason because the chances of – I'm just saying
– Now it feels a lot more
that's
dangerous.
That's Mike Tomlin running the ball with 5 seconds left.
That's what you guys are saying is if we did it at midseason, we are locking in the 12 playoff teams, which to me seems crazy. So I don't think we need an artificial deadline, maybe December 1st.
Greg is loving this because he sees what's going to happen. We're going to swing and miss invariably because we're having fun with this and we're going to be bold on a couple teams.
And then Greg's going to bury us.
Right.
For
we're going to go back to the motto.
We're having fun.
We're forking teams March, late March after the season ended.
Hey, I'm the one. I threw out the Raiders well before you guys went. I'm throwing out the Raiders.
I'm the one that gave to charity first. All right, Greg, we got it. How many times?
The worst running bit.
Finally. So that's the fork conversation for this week. Yeah, it shouldn't last more than a couple more weeks, but it is a lot more scary now that you put it that way. Because locking in 12 playoff teams,
I don't know.
That doesn't
in November
really make, that doesn't
sounds,
make sense to me.
Well, history tells us that at midway through, we have absolutely no idea about at least 1 or 2of them.
No, I agree. We should try to be bold and fork a lot of the teams. Now, if we're leaving one wild card spot open for 2 teams in the AFC, for instance, I don't think that's a crazy thing to do for a little longer than
I agree.
Season.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, wouldn't it be the worst thing to mess up? As we did say, as a group, we will give to a local charity, Sydney, can we get on that, finding a worthy charity in the Culver City or Los Angeles area to give to?
Absolutely. I'll get right on that.
Okay, and you're going to chip in an equal amount as well.
Oh, yeah, with my very high salary. I'm working on it.
Seems a little self-serving to benefit our city. Why not the city that we
– of
you know, that. Well, no, the city that if we fork a team and then they make the playoffs, we
ooh,
help that city.
Ooh, that's a great call.
You know.
What if we start giving to charity every time a Making the Leap candidate doesn't make the leap?
Oh, we have nothing left.
You nailed it, Mark. That's a great idea. Are you good with that, boss? If we – a team comes back from the dead, rips the fork out of their back, and makes the playoffs, we donate to a charity from that team's city.
Sure. That makes sense. It's happened three times in three seasons overall.
Oh, this is great.
And we should.
All right. Finally, let's talk about the Thursday night football game, the Falcons at Saints, the Superdome, which has become a house of horrors for the home team in recent years, or at least what's their record in the last, like, 10 games there?
Can they've lost six in a row.
Six in a row, and now they have an undefeated team coming to their building. But let's face it. Here's the one thing I'm going to say, and if we had hero picks, maybe, just perhaps, I would have one riding on the Saints in this game because I think the Falcons are overdue. I think, Greg, you made the point on the podcast on Sunday that Matt Ryan, for how you know the things they've done right this year, Atlanta, Ryan hasn't been great. And I could see a stinker, even against a bad defense, potentially the Falcons not playing well, Julio Jones is banged up, and the Saints win a game in prime time.
Well, you know they're doing well when they win their stinker. I mean, Matt Ryan had an awful performance against Washington. They made so many mental errors, and yet they won the game anyways.
Missed two chip shot field goals, too, from a normally reliable kicker.
They played a defense and a secondary in Washington that can do something that New Orleans will – now, if Julio Jones isn't playing, that's one thing, but New Orleans will not come close to touching them the way the Redskins did. I mean, the Washington put the clamps on – and shut down that offense for large parts of that game.
They were moving the ball, but then couldn't finish out the drives. I'm interested to see this Falcons defense. I'm not really sure how they're doing it. Maybe it's that money ball tackling, you know, theory that I had before. I mean, they have Desmond Trufant.
Better coaching.
Who's the best player in their front seven right now? Paul Warlow, their middle linebacker.
Every time I turn on the Falcons, Nate Stupar makes a play.
I mean, Vic Beasley.
Hell, stupid.
It is. I have rarely seen a professional get as dominated and enveloped as a pass rusher as Vic Beasley did last week against Trent Williams. Now that was going.
Trent Williams did. Yes.
That was against one of the best in the league, but it just kind of highlighted Beasley's size. Now the Saints are without, or at least they were without last week, Teron Armstead, who's one of the best left tackles in the NFL, and the Saints missed him dearly last week. They did not protect Drew Brees well, and it's really the Saints' offense. I mean, the recipe for them winning is scoring 30 points, and we just haven't seen that.
They also – New Orleans is getting run over on the ground, too. This could be a Devonta Freeman game, who 8 touchdowns already on the year. I like Atlanta's offense. They're so much more balanced than they were a year ago, and I'd be surprised if they lost this one.
I think it'll be close. This rivalry is always close, but I agree. I think the Falcons are going to move the ball. I mean, the Saints have absolutely no pass rush. I mean, that's why Sam Bradford looked good. That's why Cam Newton had one of the best games of his career. Everyone who plays against this Saints defense, except for Brandon Whedon, and he even looked fine, you know, plays the best game of their career.
I'm killing the wrong Ryan brother, too, because there is not a worse coach defense than what Rob Ryan's done with the Saints. Give me one.
Well, not a great roster, but I can't.
Well, all
really
right,
disagree.
But see, then in Atlanta, they were very plain last year, and in comes Dan Quinn,
that's
and it's
fair.
Not an oversell. It's not. It's a lot of the same players, and they're completely responding differently.
That might be part of the Rob Ryan flaw, is that if he doesn't have the personnel, his schemes do not work, and that's a pretty big flaw to have. Let's do some picks for the game, and Mark, we'll start with you, and we should mention Mark. That you're in trouble on the picks.
Oh, I mean, it's
over.
You went bold,
and you went 5-9 last week, and you are now, for the season, and this isn't, you know, we don't do spreads around here, but this is straight win-loss. You're only 40-37 and 14 games behind Patcher.
Well, it is. For me, I think that when I get off to a good start, it continues. But I made two weeks out of the last three, I tried strategies that were absolutely dunderheaded. If Greg is choosing not to make picks, I should not be allowed to anymore. I should be removed from – I'm not kidding. If I wanted to do this right, remove me from it now.
Well, bring the forking segment back.
By the way, Mark, this is a weird time for Mark's the fire to be in Mark's eyes for the first time in this
He's
show.
Mad at himself.
Shooting daggers at Mark, at Greg, pointing at him. Take me off.
All right, I'll do it. You're forked.
I'm out.
I mean, you can keep picking. You need to keep picking. Well, I can't
believe it. Well, no, I say remove me.
I'm just saying it doesn't matter.
The emperor has no clothes.
Speaking of dunderheaded.
I have been unprofessional. You should remove me from it.
14 games back, it's over.
Don't think we don't see through this, by the way, Sessler.
What?
What you're going for here.
What?
You're looking to get taken off the picks because you just don't want to do them.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's – what are fans learning from my picks? Nothing.
Now not to,
which, not to take. To
by the way, Wes, and there's a sandwich prop between Wes and I. Actually, strangely enough, I'm not involved with it because, Mark, you set it up that Dan will beat Wes. And I agreed with you, obviously. And then Wes took you on. Through 5 weeks, we're in a flat-footed tie at 48-29. Mm. And Patrick leading the way, beating everyone at 54-23.
Hey, Patrick.
So he's got that.
Patrick deserves some credit there. That's a big lead, six games.
He's doing a great job.
That's where. And, Greg, you could have been part of this, and it would have been way more fun. But you stole it from us. You stole that brotherhood that we once had.
Greg's been making my picks for me.
Mark, your pick for this particular game as you try to climb out of a deep, dark hole.
I will go Saints. Just kidding. Falcons. I'm not going to go. I see. I'm done with the stupidity. Mm-hmm. I'm going Falcons.
That was convincing.
All right. Score.
41-24.
All right. Wes.
You made some excellent points. The Falcons may well be ripe for a loss. They have to go on the road in a short week.
Just want to make it clear, Wes was talking about me.
And it's about me. And weird things happen on Thursday nights. But look at what the Falcons are doing with this coaching staff. They're number one in the NFL in run defense. They have the hottest running game in the NFL. And this, they took over a team that absolutely were known for having no backbone whatsoever. You could run over them, and they couldn't run. Look at the Falcons coach. You know what's missing from the Seahawks? Dan Quinn.
Like that.
Bingo. Final score.
33-24, Falcons win.
I will go 30-27, Saints victory over the Falcons.
This is the beginning of the end of Dan.
I mean, you mentioned it. I don't know if this is an official stat, but I believe Devonta Freeman has broken a tackle on every single one of his runs this year, NFL record.
No, that's behind Deion Lewis.
I just made
He's
that
broken
up. But he
tackles.
Has. Every single run, Deion he breaks a tackle.
The Deion Lewis touchdown on Sunday? Marron.
Oh, that guy's awesome.
31-30. They always play a good, fun game. So
great. Yes. Great picks, but listen, your picks don't count.
I make the Thursday night picks.
Okay. All right, that's it for Tuesday show. We'll be back on – it was a little premature, Sid. Don't worry about it. Listen, we're still working out the kinks. I'll cue you up for the – and, Greg, you did a nice job, I should say, on Sunday night as well with the timing – of the drop, the outro drop.
Thank you, Dan.
And to the people that keep asking what
that
the song is.
That felt pretty sincere the way you just said that.
Maybe. People keep asking what the song is. I'll have TD send that out again, but I don't know if you have any access to it. We'll be back on Thursday. We're going to make all our Week 6 picks and preview all the games, and we're going to talk about what's in the news and what's going on with Mark and his views on life. We'll be good. And that's it. So until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, the mailman, Chris Wessling, the boss, Sydney, and everybody else behind the glass. Until Thursday night.